Welcome to Between the Lines, a monthly magazine show on the third Thursday of every month at 2 p.m. on WGXC. I'm your host, Anne Forbes Cooper. The Catskill Jazz Factory is an exciting new program beginning this week at the Orpheum Performing Arts Center in Tannersville, New York. My first guests are Piers Playfair, whose idea the program was, and the celebrated world-famous jazz pianist Aaron Deal. And they both discuss how it all came about, what the aims are, how to attract new audiences to jazz, and what makes jazz fun. Later on in the show, I have a phone interview with the renowned jazz critic Stanley Crouch, who is the advisor to the programme. And he also has a thing or two to say about what makes jazz fun. Stay tuned. How exactly did all this come about, the jazz program at the Orpheum?
For the last 5-10 years, a couple of families in particular have spent a great deal of time renovating buildings and building facilities in Tannersville and somewhat in Hunter as well. This has been supported by a couple of clubs that are here in the area and various residents thereof. And I was asked if I would think about what we could do in terms of programming. And after spending some time on a committee, I felt the best thing I could do was lead by example and start a program. And looking through the various different disciplines, to me, the most attractive was jazz, not least because of the large number of jazz musicians in the area and the relative paucity of programs, you know, as well, that were there. So I reached out to an ex-neighbour of mine who I'd lived in the village with in 1985, 1987, a man by the name of Stanley Crouch, for an introduction to a potential artistic director. And that's where I met Aaron Deal, and we started this together.
Can I just ask you exactly what your own background is?
Well, I was actually born in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. My father was a professor of drama at Williams and then brought over to the United Kingdom in 1960. Did my first 25 years there, and then. But my background is I was an investment banker and then an investor that's had an ongoing interest, I would say, in the arts.
And what's your connection to up here?
I first came up here in 1985 and rented for a long time in Woodstock and was a homeowner in Saugerties, and then discovered the Onteora Club in the mid-90s and became a resident member there, and just fell in love with the area, not least because we brought our common interest, i.e. Scotland. There's a great deal of similarity here, of beautiful mountains and lakes and walks. And it was really the life here and its beauty that that attracted me.
And you had previously been involved with the Orchard Project?
Yes. My first artistic love is the theatre. It's my family is a theatrical family. My father's discipline at Williams was drama. My mother went to RADA. My grandfather was a well-known actor manager in London. And we felt it would be a great idea to do something with the theatre here in Tannersville. And the Orchard Project was essentially a residency programme where we brought up and still do bring up theatre companies where they can help really develop art, which they then bring down back into New York.
Are you a particular jazz aficionado? Is this a great passion of yours?
No, I have to be honest. I've listened to lots of jazz, but could quickly get caught out by anybody who asked me anything about the discipline. I've been doing a lot of homework with Aaron recently to sound, vaguely credible. No, my real passion behind this is to really utilise this wonderful new theatre. and to really, I'd like to, certainly to help the jazz discipline, but I'm also very keen to see traffic develop here in the Catskills, and the educational outreach program, of which I think jazz is a wonderful tool, is also very important to me, because for the last year we spent a great deal of time not just with the Hunter Tannersville schools, but also visiting schools in Kingston and Poughkeepsie and Newburgh. And what we'd like to do is really expand that outreach. So I would actually say education is my primary passion in this, as well as regional renewal.
And of course, we're talking about the Orpheus Theatre in Tannersville, which used to be a cinema.
It was a cinema, yes. And it was a lovely cinema because very few people went to it. And if you were slightly late, they'd wait for you. You could phone them up. And so the screening times were flexible. And but it shut down many years ago. Probably about 20, 25 years ago. And the building was essentially derelict for many years. So it was really thanks to the generosity of Peter and Sarah Finn, who were behind the Catskill Mountain Foundation, as well as the Hunter Mountain Foundation, that this wonderful new building was put up over the last 5 years.
Why don't you talk specifically about the jazz program that's coming up?
I would refer you to Aaron on my left here.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And this is Aaron Deal, who, of course, is the extraordinary jazz pianist and wunderkind.
Wunderkind, I'm not a kind anymore.
Protégé of Wynton Marsalis.
It's really been an honor to be a part of this project. Like Piers mentioned, I met him through Stanley Crouch, who's been one of my mentors here for probably the past 5 or 6 years. Stanley had approached me a year and a half ago or so, mentioning that he knows a gentleman who has an interest in building a jazz program in the Catskills. And I hadn't spent much time here in the region. I think maybe I'd been here twice in my life, one time I did a gig, for a private party, and another time I just drove through here, so I hadn't much familiarity with the region. But I got a chance to know Piers and to understand his passion for this area, to build the region, revitalizing the culture here, and the awareness of culture and the arts. And so I thought it was very important for me to be involved in any way I could, and that's how we came up with Catskill Jazz Factory.
Okay, so what exactly is it? Why don't you spell out what it is?
Okay, so essentially for this year we have a week residency where we have several different components. One component being a master class / workshop with Joe Lovano, who's an incredible, legendary tenor saxophonist. He'll be working with two ensembles that will be here throughout the week. They're post-grad students from college or current college students that are trying to develop their ensemble sound within the context of the tradition of jazz music. And so each group has an ensemble that's been working together for several years, and they're trying to have an opportunity to purely devote time to refining their ensemble. Okay, that's one component. Another component is the educational component that will involve, and this is really the most important component, it's involving the various schools in the region. And Piers and Greg Dayton have been instrumental in getting the various schools out interested in the program. And what we're going to be doing on the day is speaking, along with my colleagues, we'll be speaking about jazz, what's important, how jazz has influenced American culture, and how it can relate to their own lives in the fundamental sense of teamwork and working together, and how there's structure that you can have, but also improvisation in areas where you can be creative. So we're going to be spending a day both with elementary school students and high school and middle school students. And then we're going to have a select period where we're going to be working with a few students who already play musical instruments who, or maybe at an intermediate level, and they'll have one-on-one time with myself and the other faculty members who will be involved.
And how many students are actually going to be involved with this?
Total of 11.
No, it's 125 elementary schools.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And it'll be about 10 to 15 high school kids that are good musicians, yeah.
Yes. The people who are involved in the residency through the week, the ensemble's about 11 to 15. But the actual students from the region, yes, 125.
And what specifically will be your involvement? Are you actually there every day?
I'm there every day teaching.
Inspiring.
And trying to inspire, hopefully inspiring. But yes, I will be involved in every part of the process from A to Z.
Is there anything else like this elsewhere in the States?
Yes, I mean, there are various jazz programs around the United States. There's the Stanford Jazz Program in California. There's Berkeley has a summer camp. Interlaken, I'm an alum of one of the Interlaken programs, the summer camp. They have a jazz program. But I think this is a very unique program in the sense that we are involving various aspects of what's available to us from the people who are in the community. I know Pierce is a member of the Auntie Art Club. A lot of his colleagues are getting involved to help out financially. We have my colleagues from New York City. We have Joe Lovano. People from all generations, from my age, I'm 26 now, to young students, to older people like Joe Lovano
or
Stanley Crouch. So it's very much a multi-generational type of dialogue that we're having.
I think that what we see as unique is its multi-dimensional purpose, if you like. It's not only about jazz, it's about outreach, it's about working together, it's about the development of the region and using jazz to do that. And that, I think, is quite unique. So to involve kids as well as high schoolers, as well as some of the local people who come up for weekends, who are essentially weekenders, and they will be able to come to the concert on Saturday. So the notion of a factory was to be a factory of jazz and outreach, and that over time we'd certainly like to expand the programming. We already have it in mind to really program throughout the year, where we hope to program at the Last Chance, which is a local bar, which has a good place. So it's, Tannersville becomes known as a place where jazz is played. And we certainly hope to visit some of the schools as well and on a number of occasions. So we want to be kind of a factory of jazz and outreach.
Right. And I think with the emphasis on education and outreach, especially people in the community, students, year-round, not just for a week.
And I think I just sort of say that the key really is that at its root are artists of the absolute highest quality.
Yes.
Because artists of the highest quality attract audiences, attract people who want to hear them. The educational component, looking at it strictly, as a program development, is critical because that attracts funding. And so there are various key pieces in all of this. So to get a good educational, the consequence of a great educational component is very good funding, which allows us then to really get really first-class artists involved in the program.
Now, since you mentioned the funding, this is in fact a non-profit.
Yes.
How is it being paid for?
Well, the fortunate thing, before undertaking this, I wanted to make sure that we would be around for a while. So amongst the various different really weekenders that came up here and people interested in the region, we got three-year funding. And so we raised, really before we started in September, about $300,000 to be able to do that, which was a terrific amount. And it was very important to me because, a lot of things come and go. And it was important that we could pay people properly, not cut corners. And it's like moss gathers on a rolling stone. Once you've started something good, it tends to create an energy that creates other things. And we're seeing that now. We're seeing potential donors develop that will come from outside the region, that will come potentially from New York City.
And if you've just joined us, you're listening to Between the Lines. I'm your host, Anne Forbes Cooper. I'm interviewing Piers Playfair and Aaron Deal, the founders of the Catskill Jazz Factory, currently on This Week at the Orpheum Performing Arts Centre. Later on in the show, there's my interview with the renowned jazz critic Stanley Crouch. I think it's going to be a fantastic benefit for an area like this where, as you sort of mentioned earlier, there really isn't anything else like it. Were people chosen for this? Did they apply? Or how did they become involved with it, the students themselves?
Well, there wasn't a formal application process. I chose the students based on my knowledge of their ability and my feeling that they would be a good fit for the program for this year.
And, of course, you're culminating, this whole week is culminating in a concert on the Saturday night.
That's correct. And we'll have both ensembles perform. My colleagues and I will, we might play a tune or so, but our firm focus is, primary focus, is to discuss what the audience is hearing and why is, what are the elements to listen for, certain cues to listen for in the music, as a listener, to help understand a little better or enjoy a little bit more what they're hearing. And so it'll be a performance slash educational program about jazz and how to listen to it and what makes it fun.
Yeah, and this is very important to my mind because, again, having not known a lot about jazz when I started this, I think understanding things helps you be a better audience and helps you come back for more. You can stumble onto all sorts of nights in jazz, which candidly, unless you're a real aficionado, are a little difficult, which I think gives the discipline a bad name with some audiences. But what I hope what we'll have is an audience that's will be a mix. Some people will be jazz lovers, but many will be local people who, you know, we've asked to get interested or parents of the students. I think it's important that we have something that's fun, that's educative, that explains the rules, that what's going on. And we will look at success as, one, if they come back next year, or even if they start to come to the last chance, and we help develop the following for the artistic discipline here in time as well.
Since you mentioned fun, in fact, you both mentioned fun, I'm going to put you on the spot here a bit, Aaron. So what is it about jazz that's fun then? Can you sort of sum up people who might be curious with thinking about they're not that familiar with jazz?
Sure. Well, one of the most fun aspects of the music is you can get together with 3, 4, 5, and any number of musicians with whom you've never played before. They could be from any part of the world. They're all jazz musicians. But you have a common language that you speak, that you understand and you know. And then through a process of really what I call negotiating, you're listening to each other while you're performing, while you're playing. You can have your own unique identity and sense of style, but you can be empathetic, and you should be and have to be in order to make good music, empathetic to the other musicians who are on the bandstand and what they're doing. And that unity in sound is really, and that interaction between musicians is really what makes the process so fun and exciting. And it's exciting for the musicians. It should be exciting for the listeners. Now, sometimes it can be very exciting for the musicians, and then the listeners are like, what's going on? So that's one of our goals here, to let people know this is what's happening.
No, I think that's exactly right. And as you learn something that's kind of like, I saw Aaron the other day at Dizzy's, and he said, I'm just so exhausted because the drummer's so difficult to keep up with, you know? And I thought, maybe it's the drummer's job to keep up with Aaron, you know? But, I mean, I asked him several questions about it, and I think that has made me now a better listener I understand the thing more. And I think what we'll have, you know, a little bit of a New Orleans jazz, Chicago jazz, New York jazz, and one can see how it develops and why jazz is where it is today. And I have a feeling people are going to come out of this and go, wow, that was really cool. And it was fun, you know. And then they can go to The Last Chance and, you know, listen to a bit more.
Listen to a bit more, okay. So now you've just raised something else I want to ask you, actually. So where is jazz today? Can you even attempt to answer such a huge question?
Where, in terms of, in relationship to...
Where it's come from? Where it might still go? I mean, what's the popularity of jazz? What's the appeal of jazz today? Is it there's so much competition out there.
Right.
And I listened to an interview you did with Marianne McPartland.
Okay.
And you mentioned that as a child, you really weren't that into jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Where is jazz at in gaining new audiences, I guess?
Well, I think what's so attractive about it is that it's not set in trends. Popular music is going to come and go, whether it's hip-hop, whether it's rock and roll. Those are all very valid and great forms of music. But the great thing about jazz, and same with classical music too, is you have this long history of the tradition of the music where you learn the language and then you're able to expand on the language. And this, you know, it evolves over a long period of time. But you just, as a musician, you have... You're able to take all of these various components of the music, various styles, and you're able to mold it and make it into your own unique thing. And then as far as the listeners are concerned, I'm finding today people just want to hear good music. And this is going back to quality. People just want to hear good music. And for most people, I think it's the fact that they haven't been exposed to jazz. It's not on the radio. It's not on the TV. It's not, and you have so many options. And yeah, on iTunes, you know, Duke Ellington isn't going to be the first artist that comes up on the iTunes page. So it's a matter of exposing this music to people and making it accessible and making it good. Sometimes the quality of the music that people, when they do get a chance to listen to it, it's not at its best. So they hear it one time and they say, well, we have other options, so we're not gonna go with this option. So that's how I feel about jazz today. I think the quality, if we maintain a high quality of musicianship, we're able to utilize the language in a way that's expressive and that's invigorating. I think that will go a long way into ensuring the legacy of jazz music.
I'm going to ask you just to recap a little and talk about your own background, where you're from, and what turned you on to jazz.
Well, I'm from Columbus, Ohio, originally. My grandfather plays trombone and piano. And so when I was a young boy, I always heard the music. I mean, it was around the house. My grandfather, my parents, when I was about five, just bought a piano. And so during the holidays, like Christmas time, my grandfather and another family friend, they would, who sang, they would do duets together. And I just heard the music. I got piano lessons when I was seven. But I started playing classical music. I got really involved with classical music. And didn't really have too much to do with jazz until later on when I went to Interlochen. I mentioned Interlochen earlier, and I met this this kid named Eldar Jangirov. He's from Kyrgyzstan, and he was brought over by this guy who's patron who recognized his talent. This 13-year-old who could play like Oscar Peterson. So we were at Interlochen the same time, and we got a chance to hang out and talk, and he was showing me some things. I said, man, that's really great that you're able to do that. And so he really kind of inspired me to become more interested in jazz music. And I already had, I guess, the tradition the tradition there in my blood from my grandfather. So after that summer at Interlochen, I went back to my grandfather, and I just got more involved. And then just the rest is history, I suppose.
How can you bring more young people to jazz? How can you attract them?
There's a couple of points I think that are important. Mm-hmm. I think the first is to make it fun, and I think where you have to really give Winton a lot of credit at Jazz at the Lincoln Center is going to Dizzy's is fun. A lot of people don't know that, but it's a nice venue. You can have dinner. But I don't think in, say, the last 20, 30 years, jazz has done itself a lot of favors on that score. So I think there's a change in the air, and I think that's very positive. I think also, you know, we can't, through this program, suddenly make jazz much more popular, right? Mm. Any more than we can change the education system in New York State. We can't, but we can be a drop towards change. And we can be an example of change as well. And to the extent that this program grows, maybe other programs, you know, in California see it, say, hey, that's a good idea.
And making it affordable, too.
And making it affordable.
Yeah, that's another issue.
And that's a key thing. I mean, it's $10 on Saturday night.
That's a good segue.
No, but it was important to us because this needed to be priced to a local audience, mm-hmm. you know, where, you know, we've had Hurricane Irene up here. We, you know, we're very dependent upon the weather because a bad ski season, which is what we've had, really affects local people. Mm-hmm. And so even $40 is a lot of money for a family of four to come here. And so, you know, there are schemes in place to bring people because you don't have to be rich or middle class to like jazz. We want people from all different parts of life to come here and go, you know, that impacted me. You know, so the guy that helps us out in the house, we're making him come. The best thing that could happen, he would normally not come, but the best thing that could come is he could come back to us and say, hey, I really enjoyed that. Maybe I'll go to the last chance, you know.
And it's important to know that this music is for everybody. They have very swanky clubs like Dizzy's, yeah. or the Jazz Standard in New York City, or, you know, you can hear jazz at Carnegie Hall, you know. But it should be accessible to everyone who can afford at any price point. Okay, so whether it's $10 tickets or $40 tickets, and one of the things that Jazz Lincoln Center has done very well is they have $10 tickets as well as the tickets that are very expensive. So.
And believe me, there will be envelopes on the chairs for people who feel they could like to donate a little bit more.
Yeah, that's right.
People wanted to hear your music. Mm-hmm. They just go to... Is there CDs out there? They go to YouTube?
There's my website, and there's links to CDs and things. And there's footage on YouTube.
And you play with a trio?
I have a trio with quartet, different configurations. It just depends.
Okay. And your website is...
AaronDeal.com. And then we have the Catskill Jazz Factory has a website, CatskillJazzFactory.org.
Yes, CatskillJazzFactory.org, and then you can link into Aaron and all the other musicians as well. Because I'd say the quartet that Aaron's bringing up, you know, is full of terrific musicians as well.
Yes.
So.
Would you like to mention who they are?
Sure. One is Dominic Farinacci. He's a trumpet player with whom I went to school. We went to the Juilliard School together. And he has... great educational program in Cleveland, Ohio, his hometown, called the Tri-C Young Artists Program. So he comes with a lot of experience with education and a great musician. Another is Quincy Davis. He's a drummer, he played in my trio before he moved to Manitoba, Canada, to teach at the university up there. And a few other, there's a great singer who's coming. Her name's Charnay Wade, and she was one of the three finalists in the Thelonious Monk International Competition. So very fine musicians coming along for this week.
And that was Piers Playfair and the jazz pianist Aaron Deal. Next up, my interview with Stanley Crouch, so don't go anywhere.
just explain how you got involved and why you got involved?
Well, I'd known Pierce Playfair for about 20 years or more, but he's been very excited about doing something in the Catskill area. So he started talking about getting something together that would appeal to the young people in that area and give them kind of a boost. And so he asked me if I knew anybody whom I thought could begin to put it together. Set Piers and a young musician I knew named Aaron Deal, who had he had won the Cole Porter Award, and I often would run into him in the practice room. I would be going down the hall and in the practice room, I would hear somebody practicing something that was extremely hard to play. So, and then almost every time, if I got curious and opened the door to see who it was, it would be Aaron there at night practicing, you know, Art Tatum, extremely difficult, practicing, throwing a smock, difficult from another angle completely, practicing something done by Errol Garner, which was also extremely hard. In fact, I never stumbled upon him practicing anything that was easy. So, when he and Pierce Playfair met, that was momentous for this particular event because Aaron is a very special guy. I mean, he's not only a superb young musician, but you know, he can fly a plane. He's not your average student. A music student who walks down the street, you know, he actually can go to an airport and get in a plane and fly. But see, there's certain people that are like that. And he's a very patient person. He also understands all of the things that begin to go through the minds of younger musicians when they start their first job. So he also reads a great deal of literature about jazz, you know, and continues his studies constantly. So what I mean is, if somebody refers him to a very high quality book written about Duke Ellington, he'll read it. He's that kind of a guy, and he and Wynton Marsalis have been very, very good friends from when he was a kid.
What exactly is your role as advisor then?
Well, it's a role that is connected to many of the things that I know about aesthetics, that I know that many of the experiences that I've had in the world of jazz, booking clubs, helping to start jazz at Lincoln Center, writing about the music. I'm presently finishing up the first volume of a biography about Charlie Parker that will be quite an eye-opener in the world of jazz because it will contain a great deal of previously unknown information.
Really?
And how the guy got together, what he did. So it has, oftentimes when I talk with Aaron, we've talked about different people whom he had in mind and why he had them in mind. And I would tell him what I thought about the individuals and would suggest different kinds of things. And we would come to, we would finally agree on a decision about who should be put in place.
I understand you're coming up here for a couple of days during the program. Are you actually taking an active part?
Well, I'll be doing whatever is necessary. I'll probably be talking with the students in situations where they may ask me questions about things that I know, whereas the musical instruction will be left to people who know how to do that.
And what do you hope that something like this achieves?
There are a number of things that I hope for it to achieve. The first idea to me is passing on to young people, by example, the fact that quality can actually lead to success, because so much of what is happening in the world today or in the country is an emphasis on profit being the ultimate goal. And though profit is not pernicious automatically, profit is not shallow or empty automatically, but there is not necessarily an ongoing awareness outside of the world of technology about the importance of quality. So I think that for young musicians to actually come in contact with an art form that makes very unique demands on its performers, but and that achieves its success through the attentive level of empathy that is necessary to perform, and the quality that is resultant from that empathy, I think that's a fairly fresh experience for young people today, because as far as I can tell, there is a very great need for people to actually experience sort of a team effort, but that is appreciated quite obviously in basketball, baseball, hockey, blah blah blah. The team sports and all of that, they do emphasize the importance of individuals achieving their goals within the context of supporters who help them and people whom they help. So that's not unusual in the world of sports. But it's not emphasized quite as much in the world of art, although essentially important to being a good musician, being a good actor, being any kind of a performing person. One has to figure out how or learn how to bring his or her individuality to the situation, and also learn that there's a way to realize one's individuality most powerfully through empathy.
I knew you're something of a purist when it comes to jazz, so, and this program, of course, focuses on heritage, education, artists, and artistry, and the outreach part of it as well. Just how traditional is it going to be?
The idea of tradition as a way of imitating the way gangsters used to put their enemies' feet in buckets filled with concrete, with wet concrete, and then they would throw them in the water, and they would go to the bottom, of course. Now, a number of people today seem to think that that's the position that tradition takes in arts, because there's kind of a phony understanding of innovation, experimentation, blah, blah, blah. The thing is that a performer has the same problem, regardless of style, which is bringing the vitality to the art. You know, because that's the fundamental problem that exists in every art form and in every art style. It's can you sufficiently humanize the material that you're going to use so that it can touch people? So what I mean is, if someone is performing a part in a piece of drama written by Samuel Beckett, and then the person is given play to do that Shakespeare wrote, or then the person has to do something that was written in the Greco-Roman era, it's not going to be any easier to do a good performance, because one is older than the other. You always have the same problem. You have to bring the material alive, because that's what people go to see. The fundamental power of art is its vitality. And vitality actually even transcends emotion. It contains it always.
Is there any room for the avant-garde or the innovative or the imaginative in a program like this?
Well, the first thing is, an imaginative performer is that doesn't have anything to do with being avant-garde or not. Being avant-garde doesn't make somebody a magistrate. It may make you do something that's eccentric or contrived. It's not necessary. It doesn't necessarily have the vitality that you want from a work of art, a work of musical art. That's not what is desired by the audience. Nor is it an important thing to art itself. You know, like I know a lot about James Joyce and a lot of other people who were major figures in the creation of modern literature. They were looking to get to the quality that they knew existed in the writing that had preceded them. Question that any artist has to address is, how do you get to the thing that is good? And by no means am I saying that you have to ignore things that present themselves as avant-garde. That's not really the question. The vitality is the question.
There are so many different competing musical forms out there. How do you get the attention of young people with jazz?
Well, I'm not sure. As far as I know, the only reason that people are interested in things like hip-hop is because they hear them all the time on the radio. They aren't born say like something like rap, because I live in a neighborhood that has a lot of small children in. I don't hear them walking down the street rapping. So it's not something that's natural. It's just something that's on the radio. We live in a period where repetition has much more to do with the definition of quality than the thing itself. So there is one profoundly important aspect to jazz which has never, ever been thought of before, but we didn't have the technology to prove it until now, that high-quality jazz can be performed and musicians can respond to each other at the same velocity that the internet speed is bragged upon by computer salesmen. There's an ad on television in which they say, well, you know, two seconds are, that's a long amount of time, because that's all it takes for this our machine to communicate to another machine thousands of miles away and keep a train running that would stop if they were not able to communicate that quickly. But jazz musicians have been performing and responding to each other, as can be proven by many, many recorded performances, at that speed. And nobody ever talks about that. You can take any great performance by a band, and you can see how quickly people make decisions and make high quality decisions at velocities that are hard to believe. Now, one of the things that we're trying to do at Jazz at Lincoln Center, which will probably be brought into the Catskill program in the second or third year, is we're going to start a jazz magazine that does full transcriptions of performances that are from recordings that have been made, so that a musician can actually read the performance. While a musician is listening to the performance, one can be reading the music and can see the different things that are happening and say, oh, this guy played this bass note, and when he played that, this drummer was playing that, the saxophone player was playing that. All of them were responding to each other, and these were the results. Now, once those things are set in front of people, they're fairly amazing.
And if you're just tuning in, I'm talking to Stanley Crouch, the renowned jazz critic who is the advisor to the Catskill Jazz Factory, a new program on at the Orpheum Performing Arts Center in Tannersville, New York. Back to the interview with Stanley Crouch.
You also might just have answered my next question, which is how is jazz evolving today? Are there particular trends or developments that interest you as a critic?
Well, the thing is that the music, it has a perpetual significance because of the human qualities that are made use of in extremely good performance. So it doesn't actually, so it doesn't matter what style somebody's playing in. It's whether, again, they get to that, they achieve that sense of vitality, because everybody today, in and out of jazz, are very concerned about how the machinery that is available now tends to reduce the value of the human input in situations. I was talking with a film critic this morning who was talking about how movies are not as good as they used to be because people don't spend as much time making them because the directors cannot see the way, you know, John Ford, Howard Hawks, and many other great directors, Billy Wilder, used to be able to see, because they actually learned how to tell when a performance was taking place what is going on. Whereas today, now after a take has been made, then they look at it immediately and then they start assessing what they should do. Now the thing is that in jazz, the superior machine is still the human being. And so, because as I've said often, in jazz, the human being is the special effect. Mm-hmm. Louis Armstrong was the special effect. Charlie Parker was the special effect. John Coltrane was the special effect. All those people, they're the special effects. It's the result of the decisions that they, as human beings, make at extraordinary velocities that create the quality of what we're talking about. And so that, I don't think jazz musicians have any problems of being intimidated by machines any more than anybody else should be, mm-hmm. you know.
Again, you may just have answered my next question. What excites you about jazz today?
Well, what excites me is somebody who can play.
Who excites you then? Other than Aaron Dee, of course.
Aaron can play. But what I mean is what's happening today is I keep hearing younger musicians who are actually interested in learning how to play and who are actually getting a grip on what creates the quality of sound that makes for a good performance, and understanding how to better relate to other people with whom they're playing. And see, because when you go through these various trends, then you have people who decide that they're going to do what they're going to do, regardless of whether anyone likes it or not. There's this thing in Americans that, well, I don't really want to listen to anything. I don't really want to be told by anyone what I'm supposed to do. All of which is good. See, because in this book, it's coming out about Charlie Parker. It looks at one point in his early life when all of these films were coming out of Hollywood about young Thomas Edison, about Alexander Graham Bell, about Madame Curie, about all of these different people, right? These were people who were rejected by other people and the tradition, and so the films that Charlie Parker, when he was a young man, would be seeing, basically said, well, somebody like Thomas Edison has to just accept the fact that other people cannot understand the truth of how great what he has envisioned might actually be. Well, that obviously is true, since we have the electric light and a few other things that Thomas Edison helped to get together. May seem very far removed from the proposition of jazz, but they actually aren't, because the idea of the human being standing up in a vital way against the limitations of machinery, that's an ongoing situation, yes.
I'm going to switch gears somewhat and ask you what you're currently listening to.
What I'm currently listening to?
Yes.
Well, since I'm finishing up this edit of my Charlie Parker book, I'm listening to a lot of Charlie Parker.
Well, that would make sense.
Yes, I think it would. In fact, when you called, I was listening to him, something that he recorded in 1942.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add about the Catskill Jazz Factory and its potential?
Well, I think that the musicians will have the benefit of meeting high-quality musicians who have a variety of musical experience and who can speak authoritatively about all the various ways of playing, you know, because Joe Lovano, he's a very, very fine saxophonist, and he's played in very, very fine so-called traditional groups. He's played in very, very fine groups that have been working on different harmonic vocabularies. He's played in groups that would be called avant-garde groups. He's sort of a jazz man for all seasons. He can play just about any kind of a way that people want to play today. But from a quality stance, I mean, he's not somebody who thinks that one plays an avant-garde style just makes a lot of noise. That's not how you play it. You know, a lot of people will tell you that there are no rules, that the rules are no rules. But I often talk with Ornette Coleman, who is like the patron saint of avant-gardism in jazz, so to speak. I mean, he believes in melody. And his vision is that melody is one of the freest aspects of music, you know, primarily because in most music books, the shortest chapter you'll find is the chapter on melody, because they can't tell you how to make one. They can tell you how some people made some. They can't say if you do this and you do that, you'll end up with a good melody. If you do this and you do that and you do this, you'll end up with a transcendently powerful melody. Well, they can't tell you how to do that, but they can tell you that we have three examples of that have been done. Well, do this with intervals, do this and do that, and you'll thereby be able to achieve something beautiful. But of course, anyone with interest in the arts knows that there's no recipe for anything just becoming beautiful. Against the rules, and it can be beautiful. You can do it within the rules, and it can be beautiful. There's no guarantee you're going to get there either way.
Well, let's hope we've got enough interesting ingredients to make the Catskill Jazz Factory a beautiful thing. And
oh, yes, that we do have. That we do have, because a lot of it to do with understanding what the challenge of meeting an artist actually is. And I think that Well, not I think. I'm sure that the people who meet with Aaron Deal and work with him, the people who go to the master class that's going to be given by Joe Lovano, the people who have all of the experiences that are available within the context, they're going to know more when they leave about what the music is, what the challenges are, and what the satisfactions are if one spends the time to become very, very good at doing it.
Okay. Well, Stanley Crouch, art critic, musician, writer, performer, journalist, commentator, agent provocateur, I would like to thank you so very much for being on Between the Lines. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on today.
Thank you.
That was my show for today. Thank you so much for listening. I'd especially like to thank my first two guests, Piers Playfair and Aaron Deal, Aaron, certainly you can see at a concert on this coming Saturday, the 23rd, at Orpheum Performing Arts Centre in Tannersville, New York. Also later on this evening, on the Jazz Disturbance, you can hear more from the Catskill Jazz Factory with host Cheryl Kay, who has been talking to some of the students involved. So that's at 7 o'clock tonight, the Jazz Disturbance. Once again, thanks for listening. And I've been your host, Anne Forbes Cooper.